You're listening to Connect Communities Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. If you'd like to know more about our community, stop by our website at www.connectcommunity.tv. Enjoy the message.
We've been in a series called Unbreakable, where we're going through the book of Daniel, and we're extracting lessons from the book of Daniel. And today, we're going to go to chapter 3 in a little bit of the book of Daniel, and we're titling the message, Fireproof. Fireproof. You know, we've been learning about this book and learning about the story behind it. When Daniel and some of his companions, three of his friends, we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, more popularly, but their names were Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, and they were teenagers. And as teenagers, they were captured and taken to the land of Babylon by the king Nebuchadnezzar, who exiled the Jews and took over their land. But because these four guys were noblemen, we get to read some of the stories and some of what they went through during that exile. And they went through seasons and they were given opportunities, really, by the king of Babylon to kind of fit in with their culture, to give up their Hebrew culture, give up their God, and kind of like learn the way of the Babylonians. And so they were given position and opportunities. And throughout this journey, they stood strong in their belief. They refused to take part in the culture and the ways of the Babylonians. And we saw the first week that Daniel was able to not only interpret a dream, but he was able to basically receive what the king had dreamed before the king even told him what he had dreamed. Last week, we talked about how I think last week was the dream, right? When Daniel revealed the dream and saved all the wise men from death. And the week prior to that, we talked about how they refused the ways of the Babylonians, their food and their practices. And so on chapter 3, this week, we're taking another story that happened. And in this story, Daniel is not part of it. It's his three friends, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Now, if you grew up in church and you went to Sunday school, if you read any of the traditional Bible stories, I am almost 100% sure this was one of them. This was one of the stories that you probably were taught growing up. If you didn't grow up in church, then today I'm going to catch you up, okay? You're going to be one of us. And you're going to be able to know this story as well. Now, for some, this is a story about an evil king who tried to make some nice kids bow down, and they said, "No way, Jose." But to me, as I reread and studied this story, you know, I see it more now as a love story. It's really a love story. And it goes like this. King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, made an image. It was not unusual for kings in the ancient world to make up a god for their people to serve. Sometimes they would even call themselves gods. But King Nebuchadnezzar, keeping up with tradition, wanted to make sure that his people had the same religion, and he wanted basically to arrest their faith, make sure that he had control over that as well. So he made up an image. We don't know what image it was. We don't know what it looks like, but we know this. It was 90 feet tall, and it was 9 feet wide, and it was made up of pure gold. It was a golden image. Just for reference, the Statue of Liberty, from its feet to the top of its crown, measures 111 feet. So this was a pretty big image in the ancient world, and he placed it on a plane in an area, one of his provinces, and he commanded that everybody must worship that image. at the sound of the lyre, at the sound of the harp, at the sound of the instruments, everybody should worship. And this is where we go to the scripture, Daniel chapter 3, verses 4 through 6. And the herald proclaimed aloud to all the peoples, "You are commanded, all peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace." Now, as soon as the people heard the announcement, and as soon as they heard the sounds of the instruments, guess what happened? They bowed down. They bowed down before the golden image. And right here at the beginning of this story, at the top of this chapter, we see a type. We see a picture of what could happen to us today in 2019. We will all go through moments. We will all go through seasons in the world and in life. We will face obstacles. We will face situations. We will face circumstances, adversities that will try to make us bow. And when we face those situations, our convictions will be tested. Our faith will be tested. We will be tried. And that day will come. And when that day comes, will you know to stand and not to bow? Will you know to take a stand and not bow? See, I'm convinced that, like in this story, the reason why people bowed then and the reason why people bow now is because they don't see any other way. They don't see any other way around it. So they succumb to control, to tyranny, to the pressures of the world because they are afraid of the outcome. They are afraid of the alternative. The consequences and the alternative in their situation was a fire in a furnace. So you either bow or you get burned. It's pretty simple, right? If you don't know the alternative, if you don't know any other way to escape it, you got to comply. You got to bow down. And in these days, in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the rule was bow or burn. Bow or burn. I don't know if you've ever been there. Pressured to do something you knew was wrong in an environment where if you didn't do that, you would burn. Pushed into a life that was against your will, but you had to do it because if you didn't, you burned. Coerced to lie, to deceive, to do things that were really not the best choice. But because of the environment, because of where you were going through, you had to do it. Because the alternative meant you burn. In other words, it's unemployment. It's banishment. It's loneliness. It's abandonment. The alternative is too hard. It's abuse. It's a difficult relationship. So you might as well bow. My message today is simple. It's impossible to face the pressures of the world nowadays or to stand against the threat of fire that we face without God. But with God, you don't have to bow. And with God, you don't have to burn. You don't have to bow and you don't have to burn. But to live in this kind of freedom, we must understand a little bit of what it takes and what it means to have a relationship with God, because it does take a relationship. It takes a relationship. Now, as we said yesterday, my lovely wife and I celebrated 17 years of marriage. It was a 17th anniversary. And, people would ask us, especially in the beginning, they would get surprised to know that we are married. But more recently, they've been asking, you know, how? How are you guys married for 17 years? Even this week, a friend of ours was texting and saying, like, I'm puzzled. How come 17 years? Because we're relatively young, you know. Relatively, I said relatively young. I'm 36, so you can do the math. But we've been married for 17 years. Now, early in our marriage, I could see people's you know, wonderings in their eyes when they would ask a question. Because, like, you got to get carded to buy a bottle of wine. Not that we did, because, you know, Christian home. Praise Jesus. That was a joke, guys, all right? A little glass of wine is good for the antioxidants, right? That's what they say. But you got to get carded to buy wine. We've been married for 3 years. How does that work? People would get puzzled. And you could always see their assumptions by their follow-up question, right? So you're 22, and you guys are married already? Great. Have any kids? Because you had to get into this. There's no way that you just wanted to get married. Something big must have happened for you guys to get married. We had questions, you know, and you could always kind of read people's mind. And you know, when we would answer no, they'd be puzzled, very puzzled. But the reason why I married my wife might be shocking to my counterparts or even the peoples of the world. See, I married my wife at 19 years of age because I loved her madly. And I still love her madly. I married my wife at that time because she was my best friend. She's still my best friend. She was my best friend in the whole world. I married her because we could. We had the means. We could financially. We could do it emotionally. Spiritually. Everything lined up. Everything lined up. So, you know, it made sense. And what might be even more shocking is that I married her because marriage is good. It's really quiet here today. Marriage is good. Whether you're young, whether you're old, marriage is good. Now, the fact that we saw good marriages modeled in our family might have helped a little bit. You know, our parents are both still married. All of our grandparents, I think there's only two surviving now from both sides. But they were all married to their first spouses their whole lives. And so that might have been a little bit of an encouragement as we were growing up, not to be afraid of it. But honestly, we weren't afraid of marriage. We weren't afraid of the commitment that marriage requires. And we weren't afraid of the devotion that marriage requires. We actually understood that the commitment and devotion that marriage requires is healthy. You need that. Even the little bit of the tension. You need somebody in life to keep you sane. Right? You need somebody in life to say, hey, that's too far, buddy. And you need somebody in life to encourage you to say, hey, you're doing great. This is awesome. Keep going. You need that person, right? So when it came to commitments, we understood this early on, that if our marriage was to be successful, if we were to do this right, we needed to live a certain way. Individually, each one of us, and collectively, we needed to live a certain way. And this is not like a matter of negotiation. This is how we're going to do this. Let's sit down and draw a negotiation. Let's write a contract here, right? It wasn't a perfectly measured give and take method, because that's what you do in business. That's what you do with business partners, right? You draw percentages. You divide what is yours, what is mine. And in the marriage, we understood early on that for it to be successful, both need to be willing to give all. You just got to give it all on both sides. And we also understood when it came to devotion that it is healthier if both people understand that, you know, this relationship, this commitment, this union is the most important thing and the most important relationship in our lives. You need to understand as a matter of devotion that this is the most important thing and takes precedence over all. So I know that I'm her number one. And she knows that she's my number one. And because she is my number one, because she's my number one, that guides how I approach my friendships with both men and women. Because she's my number one, it guides how I spend my time off. It guides what I watch on my phone, on TV, at home, on the computer. It guides how I speak of her when she's not around, because she's my number one. It guides how I treat her amongst friends and family. I am willing, not that I want to, But I am willing to despise, to reject, and even to offend all others for her sake. If it takes that, I'm willing to do it. She's my number one. And I'm sure that this is reciprocated. You know? Right, honey? All right. Devotion is an act of the will. It can't be imposed. This was not something that she imposed on me and said, all right, honey, this is what I expect of you, all right? You got to do these things because you know. No, devotion cannot be imposed. It has to be an act of the will. You know, and I don't want to paint a picture here that this was great from the get-go, that we knew this from February 16th, 2002, the moment we said, I do. It kind of rhymed. No. You know, I let her down many times early in our marriage. You know, I had friends, I had relationships that were strong before we re-met each other. And I had people and connections that were part of my life, that in certain areas of my life, I had a stronger connection with other people than I did with her. But I had to make the choice and to have foresight to see if I wanted my relationship with her to be the number one relationship that I committed to, I had to devote my life to it and devoted the way I saw relationships to it so that it could actually become. So my actions had to align with my confession, right? My faith, my vision, what I saw for the future of our marriage, I needed to plant the seeds right then and there when we began. And it took some learning. Now, over the years, we've talked to many people, whether they were desiring to get married or they were already married, who, were looking for either advice or wanted to talk to us about marriage and relationship. And I got to tell you this today. I'm yet to find a couple who does not agree with those two principles of commitment and devotion. I'm yet to find a couple that comes in and says, you know, JD, I really think that the best way to have a successful marriage is to take from one another, and to have a me-first mentality. I got to walk into this thinking about me first, and I got to walk into this to really take. Now, we understand this, and I know that there are a lot of people here who are not married. You might not even be in a relationship, but you don't have to be married or to be in a relationship to understand this. This is common knowledge. Like, we know this. We know this either because you've seen this modeled at home, and you saw this either, in your parents or family members where, you know, they did have commitment and devotion, and you looked up to them and you saw something healthy at home. Or you know this because you saw the opposite. You saw strife. You saw fighting. You saw tension. You saw selfishness. You saw insecurity. You saw anger. And in your heart, you would see that, experience that, and think, if you could just love each other, if you could just take care of each other, if you could just be devoted to each other and just get rid of your pride and get rid of your selfishness, my God, you could actually have a great life. You could enjoy one another. This could be a healthy thing. If you could just cross that divide, it's especially painful if one person in the household is devoted and loves and keeps the household together, and the other takes advantage of that. The other person consumes and uses and abuses that love. I have a relative who used to be in a very bad, bad place, a really bad husband. He's better now. That's why I say used to be. But this guy, you know, I was young. I was in my early teens. And I never understood why his wife stuck around. Because this guy, the things that he would do would just, I mean, she was dedicated. She was the breadwinner. She kept the family together. They had a couple kids. And she would always, you know, work hard. And he couldn't hold a job. You go from job to job to job. She was faithful to him. He had multiple affairs. She was kind and loving toward our family and everybody around. And he tried to take advantage of his parents, his uncles, his cousins, his aunts, like everybody. And she just endured it. I never understood why she just endured it. She just took it. She just endured it. And for a long time, they really lived in hell. They're better now. But for a long time, they were just in a bad situation. And our common thought as a family, like our consensus was, if he could just get his act together, man, they could have a great life. Because everything else is good, except that he is a taker. He takes advantage. He uses this love. And he just, you know, he could just get his act together. Everything else would line up. See, the same is true when it comes to our relationship with God. See, sometimes you think of your relationship with God from a perspective of rules, strict guidelines. What is the set of do's and don'ts? Let me know what I should do and what I shouldn't do, and I will just follow that list. You know, and sometimes having an idea and grasping what a relationship with God means is difficult, especially if you're new to it. Especially if you're just starting off. It can be difficult for you to grasp this idea. But this is a great picture. A relationship with God is much more like a marriage than anything else. It takes dedication and it takes commitment and devotion. It takes both. Commitment and devotion. So this story we find in Daniel 3 is really about that. These three young men, they were committed to God above all. And they were not only committed to the religion of their country or the scriptures, they were devoted. Their actions actually matched their commitment. They were willing to despise all others if needed be. Even offend the king if needed be, because of their commitment and devotion to God. And this is truly a love story. So the story continues. As soon as the people heard the announcement, as we said, they all bowed down except for three young men. Three young men who refused to bow down. And the word got to the king. There was a group of people that wanted to oust them, because this is what happened. When Daniel revealed the dream to the king, we don't know how long, but when Daniel, how long in between these two chapters, but when Daniel revealed the dream to the king, as we saw last week, they all got promoted, which is a lesson for us too, because when Daniel received the promotion, he didn't just go, you know, up to his high level, like, you know, he arrived and go like, all right, guys, if you want to get up here, you got to work hard like I did. Work hard like I did. He got up to the king and he said, and he put in a good word for his friends. So he went up to the king and asked the king to promote his friends. And the king gave them position. So these three guys were actually officials of the Babylonian kingdom. And they refused to bow. This was a pretty harsh offense. So the report came to the king and the king was furious. We see a pattern with Nebuchadnezzar here. He was an angry man. He was enraged. So he called them in to reaffirm his commitment to burn them alive. And he said this, Daniel 3, verse 15. We're reading the last part. If you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Notice how he was using idolatry to control them. He didn't say, this God right here, this golden statue is going to get you. He said, my hands. Who's going to deliver you out of my hands? And here's what they replied. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, verse 16, answered and said to the king, oh, Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't even call him king. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. There are two amazing things in this passage right here. We see two things in their reply. First, they knew God was able. They were sure that God was able to deliver them. Not only that, they knew if God was willing, he could. But they weren't holding tight to God's deliverance. That wasn't their commitment. Notice that they said, But even if he doesn't, right? If not, be it known to you that we will not serve your gods. What are they saying there? We are devoted not only to his deliverance and his power to deliver and his mercy. We're not here to get from him. We're not here just because he can get us out of your hands. We are committed and devoted to his will. Even if he doesn't deliver us, we will not bow. Even if he doesn't show up and doesn't deliver, we will not bow to your statue. Whether they lived or died, they were gods. At a first glance, if you just read this story at first glance, it's kind of hard to understand. Why would they say that? I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you're going to burn, why not bow down? Why not acquiesce? Why not bow down to pressure? Why not just give in? They understood that this wasn't just a matter of bowing down then to not get burned. These three young men, they understood that this was about their destiny. This was about handing over their destiny to the king. This was about submitting their lives to a powerful man who wanted to control their destiny. And you and I, in the same way, we will come to a point in our lives where we will have to decide who will hold our destiny. Who's going to hold your destiny? Who's going to hold your future? In whose hands will we place our lives? And we all make that choice every single day. We choose either if we're going to live for God or if we're going to live for the world. If we're going to live for God or if we're going to live for our own passions. If we're going to live for God or if we're going to live for greed. If we're going to live for God or if we're going to live for selfishness. We can either stand or we can bow. And you can ask, JD, how do I know when to stand? How do I know where the line is? Where's the line? And this is my message, it's one sentence today. If you don't remember anything from today, remember this. That devotion guides decisions. Your devotion will guide your decision. You want to know what you're devoted to? Look at your decisions. You can say that you're devoted to financial health, but your bank statement might say otherwise. You can say that you're devoted to your family, but the way you choose to spend your time might tell us otherwise. See, devotion shows up in how we make our decisions. And sometimes we confuse this too. You can be committed to something and still not be devoted to it. You can be committed to something. You could be a member at a club. You could be committed to a membership at the gym and not be devoted to it. Not picking on you, all right? I'm preaching to myself here because I didn't go to the gym all week this week, okay? You could be committed to something and still not be devoted to it. Just like in a marriage, you could be committed to somebody, say, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you, and be true to that, and say, I am spending the rest of my life with you, we're living in the same roof, and not be devoted to that person. You could be committed to God and say, you're my God, you're my Heavenly Father, I am a Christian, I am a follower of Jesus, but not be devoted to him. And this is really where the difference is made when it comes to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the lesson that we can learn from them, this lesson of commitment and devotion. You know, when I asked Alina to marry me, the reason why it was easier for me to ask her to marry me, and thank God she said yes, guys. Thank God she said yes. The reason why it wasn't difficult for me, and I mentioned that maybe, you know, it helped that we had healthy relationships around us. But I was researching my heart, actually, this year. I was thinking back, like, man, I look at a 19-year-old now being 36. And no offense to anybody who's 19-year-old here, but you don't know as much as you think you do. I knew way more than I know now when I was 19. I mean, I knew almost everything, guys. And now I'm 36 and I look back, I talk to some 19, 20, 21 year olds and I'm like, I was married. What made me be so confident? And I think this is what it is. I actually felt God put this in my heart. The reason why I could commit to this level of relationship with Eleni is because at that time in my life, I was already committed to a relationship with God. I already had that level of commitment with God, fully devoted to a relationship with God, where that relationship guided my decisions. It guided how I lived my life. It guided my friendships. It guided how I spent my time. It guided how I framed my life. So when it came to make this decision, it wasn't that difficult. I went to God. I prayed, is she the one for me, Lord? Confirm. Here's some things that would make my heart be sure that she's the one. If you do this, I will see it and I will go and I will you, right? And it happened. And I could trust God. You know, my encouragement to you today is to take that next step. To not only be committed to God, committed to your relationship with God, but to be devoted to it. To be devoted to it in a way that you know. And you have a conviction in your heart that God is for you, that He loves you. And that because He loves you, you will be devoted to you. See, that's why this is a love story. Because the way the story ends shows you that these guys, they knew God loved them. They knew that God's mercy would be way more powerful than the king's rage. Watch what happens next. Daniel chapter 3, verses 24 through 27. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" I forgot to tell you guys that he turned up the furnace to broil, highest setting, and threw them in there. Threw them in there because he was so angry. And when they're in there, this is what happens. "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came to the door of the burning fiery furnace and declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out. And come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps and prefects and governors and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over their bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. God will always honor your commitment and devotion to Him. You got to know this, that God will always honor your commitment and your devotion to Him. What a free way to live, to know that God is for you. What a free way to live, to know that whether you face adversity, whether you're even thrown in the fire, you can trust the mercy and the love of Almighty God. Listen, the story says that they were bound in their cloaks with their hats on. That's a symbol of honor, a position. And what the scripture is telling us here today is that you may face difficulties. You may face criticism when you choose to stand. You may face pushbacks when you choose to stand. You may face difficulties and even might be thrown in the fire. But when you do, it is not going to affect you. You are going to maintain your honor, maintain your calling, maintain the destiny that God has for you, because your life is in His hands. You know, the Apostle Paul was in a prison, also bound, in a Roman prison for preaching the gospel and for loving people. And he said, he wrote down in a letter this simple sentence that means the world. He said, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. It really doesn't matter whether I live or die, because I'm in His presence. If I live, He's with me. If I'm ostracized, if I'm thrown in the fire, I'll be with Him. So I win. Either way, I win because He's with me. My encouragement to you today is to understand this, and this is why this is a love story. Because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't stand because they were more afraid of God than they were of Nebuchadnezzar. They stood because they knew God was merciful. They stood because they knew God was loving and good. You know, God has already loved you. God has already done His part in this relationship. He has already given you a beautiful world to live in. He has given you a body. He has given you life. He has given you talents. He has given you ability. He has given you strength. He has given you what you need to be successful. He has already done His part. Not only that, He sent His only Son to show you His love. He has already shown how much He loves you. My challenge to you and my invitation to you is, will you receive His love and commit to His love and be devoted to His love in such a way that when circumstances arise that try to push you down and pressure you into a different kind of mold, a mold of fear, a mold of submission, a mold of tyranny, you can say, no, my heart is committed to God's love. My heart is committed to His mercy. And I know that He can deliver me from the hands of the enemy. My encouragement to you is that you may live with such devotion, because if you do, you will not only be free, but you will be unbreakable. Do you receive it this morning? Amen.